I'll call this meeting to order. As required by state law, the meeting is open to the public by telephonic communication. The college is complying with the suspended proceedings of the Open Meeting Act in accordance with Section 418.016 of the Texas Government Code. Members of the public are entitled to participate and may attend in person at this time or through remote connection and may address the board during a public hearing or in Agenda 2, communication to the board. Is there any response? I don't think so. Okay. Having none.
I'm going to do the invocation and recognition.
Yep. Adrian, would you lead us in prayer?
Sure. All right. Heavenly Father, thank you so much, Lord, for just blessing us tonight. Just pray, Lord, I pray more blessings for all the faculty, staff, and students, Lord, during this Christmas break, that they be safe and have a healthy holiday, Lord, and I pray that they come to you and celebrate the birth of your son. Lord, I thank you for the opportunities that you give us here to help do our best to improve this institution. Pray that you keep watching over us, keeping us healthy and safe. And I pray all these things in your son Jesus' name.
Amen. Don't see any gifts out of the ordinary.
No, and let's make sure, Ben, are you on?
Yes, I'm on.
Okay, great.
Hey, Ben.
Hey. All right. At this time, the board will hear comments and questions from individuals who have not requested a specific place on the agenda. If there are individuals wanting to participate, I will share the following.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't think there is any. So, assuming there are no comments or questions, we'll proceed to the next item, routine matters. Everybody's had a chance to look at them. They entertain a motion. Got a second?
Second.
Moved and second. Everybody in favor? Say aye.
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 All right. No unfinished business. New business. And I will turn it over to our president about the COVID and the rest of this. Visions in future.
Just kind of get us moving along here. I'll do it if you would like me to. Okay. The COVID-19 report, as we know, this is number 20. We've been at this a long time, and this is your updated response status. As you can tell, every month, as you know, new information is in blue. And as things are moving along, we're seeing less and less blue because we have integrated a lot of things that we were supposed to be doing, and at the same time, we're seeing a change. In the document, I will just go over some of it briefly with you. We have seen, as far as in our area, we really are seeing, as far as the status of new cases, we've seen some minimal increase, not so much in Howard County, but through the service area, we have seen some fluctuations, but not material. We have campus, the Big Spring campus, we had a little bit of an uptick in the dorms, and then, of course, that happens, we deal with that. Noticeably, we are hearing comments from our international students as they are planning on going home, about travel, as far as what has happened with some of the travel restrictions, and so that's one of the most frequent comments that we've heard really right now relative to what is going on. When you look at the document and again in looking at the areas that are in blue, I would have you pay attention to the fact that we're still doing a lot of work with the CARES money. We being Brenda and our financial aid people are working on that as well. As I've mentioned numerous times, lots of reporting that goes along with this CARES money. We have to spend it a certain way, and so we're being very diligent about that. As you know, we're still finishing up our audit, and this was a very important audit because we wanted to make sure that our auditors, in reviewing how we've used the money, would be pleased with the way that it had been used. We did make an effort during the whole process over the last several months. We were asking them lots of questions, getting guidance, making sure that we were using the funds appropriately. And Brenda was also reaching out and getting a lot of technical support from that were handling the CARES money at the federal level. So we've made a real effort to do what we're supposed to do, but there's still that unknown until they complete their audit. And so we will be looking forward to that completion, and it's coming along very nicely, and hopefully it will be wrapping up in the next few days. You will hear a report on the audit at the January board meeting. So we'll see how we did. Continuing on, as I say, a lot of the report that's still in blue has to do with what's going on with the CARES money. We, too, just like business and industry, other governmental agencies, we are waiting because of a lot of the fluctuation as far as what you're supposed to do, not do. And so we await guidance just like everyone else, as we have the differences in opinion on how things should be handled. We still have donors that are interested in helping our students that struggle, and we have found that play out over the entire pandemic. Again, at the prison, we are finding ourselves still challenged with to do, even though it is beginning to kind of level out at FBI, we still finding ourselves with altered class situations. Contact hours are not necessarily, they're not up to where they were before. And so we're still working through all that as far as what is happening in the prisons. We did have a vaccine clinic on our La Mesa campus November the 17th, and that went well. We will continue doing that as we move into the next semester as far as vaccine clinics, booster, if people are interested in boosters, just providing people the opportunity. Again, all choice, but we do want to have that option for people if they're interested. Our Open Howard College plan, we have not changed anything on that or our alert status. We are still monitoring all of that and making final decisions on how we go into the spring semester. But right now we're Amber, and what the Amber Alert allows us to do, we found out during the fall semester, we tried to open up, then we had the increases, and it actually created a lot of challenge for us because we were having to back up. And so we likely will see ourselves move into still somewhat of a amber status, and hopefully if we continue to see these kinds of things happening, then we're going to be able to open up more and more. And really it's kind of happening anyway because we're finding ourselves approach things differently. You know, we're just trying to be very trying to find the right word. I was going to say reactive, but we don't want to be reactive. We're trying to be sensitive to what is happening in the different areas that we serve because it does vary. And as we know, back in the fall, we really, over the summer, we were feeling very, very confident. And then we had the uptick and had significant breakout of cases in the West Texas area and in our service area. So we're trying to just, I think, like everyone, we're just trying to stay sensitive to what is happening. So that would be the COVID report. And I'm thinking you want me to keep going, Mr.
Please
Chairman?
Do.
All right. So then we move into the Howard County Joint Leadership Summit update. Several of you were able to participate. We appreciate the fact that you could do that. We had some that listened to the event that was live streamed, and now it is also available for anyone that would be interested in watching it. You can go to that same link and you can see the entire event. And so that, I think, was a really positive part of the night, that people could participate whether they could be there and attend in person or not. The Big Spring Economic Development Corporation has requested that the different entities that participated provide feedback through a survey. I shared that information with each of you. And if you've had an opportunity to fill that out, you can give it back to me or you can send it directly into DC. I am trying to compile basically a summary of what Howard College would suggest going forward. And we've had some internal meetings, some very small meetings and then a bigger group meeting. Our group that were able to attend that night or who have been able to watch it so that we could get some feedback from them as far as how we could improve going forward or what we should do going forward. So, again, I would ask for you to provide that information. And some of you may want to make comment in just a minute. One thing I think that was very clear for all of us, even those of us who were talking in small little one and two or maybe larger groups after the event that night, and then in the group meetings that we had on campus, we all know that for it to have been an effective, productive night, a meaningful night, that action has to be taken and other opportunities to share and collaborate and work together need to continue. And I believe that's what Mark's whole purpose was that night and his idea. Let's get everybody together. Let's provide everybody the opportunity of kind of the elevator speech, so to speak, of what everybody is planning on doing in 2022. But his ultimate goal was, how can we collaborate and work on projects as we move into 22, because we know that we've got challenges. And we went back and forth on when should we have this. We talked about doing it in January, but then we decided the best time was to do it in December as we ended the year, because everyone, everybody's working on their goals and resolutions for the next year. And we're going to have a fast start to the 2022 year because of what is happening to our community with some of the changes with GEO. And so we decided to go ahead with December, and then that would allow us all to continue to work toward the spring or the 2022 year. And so we, as a college, and some of us have already had opportunity, I've had a chance with the county group, we talked a little bit about we need to get together, the school districts, the college, the EDC, we need to get together. And it's not as if we don't. We do get together, but sometimes you need a different focus on a particular meeting, and so we discussed the fact that that's something that we want to do, and we will be collaborating together, convening that group early in the year. We also, and again, this is not set in stone yet, but we just visited briefly about the fact that because we are in Howard County, we are a relatively small county with the three school districts, and so many of the same people that serve on Career Tech advisory committees for us and thereby program for the college, but for the school districts, they may have a different approach. It just seems that it would be wise and effective if we could come up with a career tech advisory group that would work for the entire county, that could include the EDC and then some others. And so that's something we're definitely going to talk about to see if that'll work, because again, the colleges, the community colleges, we have certain rules we have to follow relative to how we work our advisory groups for our different CTE programs. And I know the school districts have their restrictions as well. But that is definitely something that we're going to continue to discuss. Any board members? Anybody that participated that night? Anybody have anything that they'd like to say or jump in? You're going to give me your survey?
Yes.
Okay, good. And then, we had our internal group meeting, and so I'll try to summarize it, and we'll turn something in from Howard College. All right. So, Mr. Chairman, you want me to just keep going? Is that the intent?
Don't be throwing the
watch out. You know what can happen. Okay. So,
we'll warn you when you get close to this.
When it's time for me to be quiet. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, then, the next thing, then, we've already been able to mention several times through this last year, we have been so blessed with so many, many gifts.
Amen.
And it has been, it's just been a year, I think, that a focus on the 75th and perhaps everyone having that focus on the impact that the Howard County Junior College District has had on this West Texas area has resulted in a lot of these gifts and people thinking about the college and ways that they, too, can participate in furthering either family legacy or something that they believe strongly in or something that a particular workforce really needs. And so we've been talking about several of these. But today, the focus, and we've got resolutions for all of these different foundations and individuals that have given us gifts. For the Big Spring area, when we mentioned some of this last month with the G.C. Broughton Foundation, we've already discussed the fact of that we received that gift for $80,000. Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming you don't want me to read all these in their entirety. And board members, I'm guessing y'all would probably like that too. So you have copies of it, and we can certainly share these with anybody that's interested. But I'll just go through and hit on the high points of what each entity or individual had interest in. As we know, the Broughton Foundation gave us $80,000. Their interest was in for computers in the Joint Computer Lab for the adult education and literacy and dental hygiene programs. They just happened to share a joint lab, and they had interest in both programs. That worked out very nicely. And then patient chairs for the dental hygiene clinical lab. And so that was much appreciated. We then had a gentleman by the name of Fred Krebs. This gentleman, I just actually called Julie, and he has an interest in, he's wanting to give scholarships to every community college in the state of Texas and is going to the websites and looking at the websites and just, he just has an interest in getting scholarship opportunity to the people we serve. And he lives in Rockport, and so he was interested in establishing, we shared all the information, how he wanted to start off. He wanted to give a scholarship to the SWID campus, and then he wanted to give a scholarship to the Big Spring campus that would also include the La Mesa campus. So that's why you see that gift resolution. Actually, we have one that is specific to the Big Spring and La Mesa campuses, and then we have one for the SWID campus. But basically, those are all from Mr. Krebs. And he donated $10,000 to establish those scholarships, basically endowing them to be able to go forward. Then we have, for the Big Spring campus, Roy and Michelle Worthy wanted to also do something to establish a gift, a scholarship for their particular interest, and they endowed it, and they have started that scholarship in the amount of $15,000, so that has been endowed and can continue to build. Moving to our La Mesa campus, I already mentioned the Fred Krebs gift. Our San Angelo community, we have a different approach there. We have been very fortunate that we have two foundations in San Angelo that have showed a lot of support to the college through the years, San Angelo Health Foundation, as well as the San Angelo Area Foundation. And multiple gifts have been given by the Health Foundation over the years and the Area Foundation as well. This particular resolution for each of these entities reflects their continued interest in what they're doing with nonprofit initiatives in particularly in the Concho Valley area, but they're actually interested in it having an impact over the entire West Texas area. They are basically investing in individuals that lead nonprofits so that they will have additional professional development that will help them leverage the resources that are available out there in the world. And so by educating those professionals, that then enables whatever entity they may have responsibility for, they then can leverage other resources that then eventually help other people, more people. And so they're approaching it from an education approach for those professionals. We've already been able to, we've had several seminars for some of those individuals that are in the nonprofit sector, and that will continue. They want to have those seminars continue for individuals, as well as they want to provide some additional leadership classes. And so they have both basically provided funding for another three-year period, and each right at $112,000, and that will enable us to fund the individuals that will be providing the training, as well as the overall oversight of this initiative. And and so both of these foundations have banded together, and they've worked together to leverage their resources too, so that there's a bigger impact not only for their particular fund, but they are being the model of showing leverage, how you can leverage and what you can do and how you can expand what you're doing. And so that's what those two gift resolutions reflect. For SWID, I've already mentioned the Fred Krebs gift. And then finally, you've heard the name McGarry Reagan a lot this year. And they have had a very strong interest in the college, and in particular, they have had a real interest in the Southwest College for Deaf. And so they have given an additional $20,000 toward the Southwest College for the Deaf, and that then increases their support just this year to $45,000 for SWIFT. So that reflects their interest in the college. So, Mr. Chairman, all of those, the district, the COVID report, of course, does not require any kind of a motion, but all of those resolutions do, and so you'll need to ask for a motion to have those approved.
Do we have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Me.
Motion carries.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah, that's amazing stuff. It really is. All right, performance measures and outcomes.
Okay, you want to do the same deal?
Same deal.
Okay.
So it's working. Let's go.
All right. Okay, so as you know, we have four strategic areas of focus, and each month there is a certain area that we will focus on. This month it's going to be in the student success and the performance excellence area. Starting first with student success and quick facts. I want to always give credit. Cindy does a super job with so many of these publications that we have, and she, once again, has put this together. But then we also have other people, Rebecca, Brenda, others. I'm always hesitant to share names because I'm always going to leave somebody out, but I know that they have had a big part in putting this together as well. And so in your quick facts, I would ask you to start with looking at the cover page. Your vision statement, your focus on rural, small. We are, I'm the other night at the summit, we are focusing and we are embracing that. And just as we shared some of the billboards that we have in the West Texas area, start small, dream big, you're going to see that throughout everything we do. We won't talk about, we have the vision, mission, and values on there, but just quickly going through this, and I'm not going to work you through this entire document. We would be here all afternoon, but I want to hit on some high points, and then you may want to look at these on your own. You may have some questions, may already have some questions that you want to ask about. But from the standpoint of looking at the district, this is the snapshot of the entire college district and what we look like. And I would make the point that we are seeing from fall of 2020, which is will forever be known as the pandemic fall semester, we do see an increase, small increase, as we are moving out of the pandemic, and so we're seeing that reflection. You'll see that we continue to be high in dual credit. And when I talk about, in a minute, when I talk about what we discussed in that commission, and I'll reflect on some of the things that are a direct result of what I'm sharing next. Again, the 55% of our enrollment is dual credit. You'll see a big difference. We went from last fall at 54% online to 37% online. Well, that should not be a surprise, again, because we're doing more and more face-to-face, and so you are seeing the changes in our instructional delivery. However, we probably are going to continue to have interest in online or some kind of opportunity to do things electronically. Contact hours. Pay attention to that. That you can see. We talked about that when we looked at fall enrollment, when we talked about that a couple of months ago, and we talked about what was happening with our enrollment, not our enrollment, our contact hours. Even though we were seeing an increase in our headcount, we were not seeing that reflected in our contact hours. And again, that can happen depending on the numbers of hours students are taking. And so that contact hour, your headcount's is going to drive tuition and fees and your revenue in that way. But your contact hours are going to drive what happens at the state level. And so we're moving into the base year, and it's going to start in 2022. It matters a lot. We're spending a lot of time talking about at the college what can we do to get back to, and we're not talking about getting back to the base year of fall 20, basically summer, fall 20, and in the quarters, and then going into the spring of 21. We've got to go back to, we want to talk about 18, because we need to get back to the pre-pandemic numbers. That's what we want to try to do. And that is a challenge because we still are finding ourselves coming through that that pandemic. As I've fondly said, the federal fairy godmother will not be around. We have been able to get through what happened during the legislative session. As you know, we didn't have a hold harmless as far as the community colleges. So you have 21, I believe, of the community colleges that saw loss in their contact hour or their formula funding. We were one of those. And at the same time, what we were able to do, we were able to use the federal money for lost revenue. So that helped offset that loss. So that matters a lot, and that's why we talk a lot about internally. We're trying to track what is happening with our numbers. What can we do to get them back? At the same time, as I mentioned a while ago, the prison, the federal prison, we continue to see we still have altered operations there. They're doing what they have to need to do. But it will have an impact on our contact hours depending on how things start in the base year come March 1. And so we're trying to work on several of those things. Again, overall as a district, you can see that when you exclude dual credit, we're 58% full-time, 42% part-time, and our residency, 83% of our college district is out of district. And again, when I get to that point in a minute, we're going to see that there's a difference as far as all these community colleges, but again, 83% of our residency is from outside. And then you see the ethnicity, what's happening with our age groups, and you can see that when you include dual credit, then we have a large number of almost 69% of our students are between that age group. But again, you pull that out, and that's gonna shift that around some. Now, again, as I say, we could spend all afternoon on this, but I'm going to just try to hit the high points. We try to take each one of our campuses and analyze it because there's uniqueness in every one of our campuses, and it drives what we do. It drives the way we budget. It drives the way we program instructionally. It drives the way we staff. It drives the way we do services, tuition, everything, because, again, we have all these different dynamics. And so when you look at the different campuses, you see different pictures, and they are different pictures. But we try to work as a college district, and that creates the complexity that we have because of those factors that I've already mentioned. So it can be a juggling act, but at the end of the day, we're responsible to do that for the different campuses. Our Big Spring campus, somewhat stable in its enrollment. I'm just going to hit high points here. La Mesa, our San Angelo campus saw some increase. The Swift campus was pretty stable. But again, when you go back and you look at what's happening in fall 18, those become really even more dangerous than what has happened in fall of 2020. When you get over into workforce training, when you look at the continuing ed page, this one, again, it matters, because we do a lot of contact hour generation in workforce training. And when you look at this page, you can see some numbers reflected what's happening with the federal prison. There's not as much impact on our other campuses relative to workforce training. I mean, there's some, but in particular, you see what happened with the federal prison. You look at quarter three. Quarter three was March 21, May 21. You're still seeing contact hours generated 48,086 compared to 2,541 in the quarter four. Again, it plays itself out as you go across and you look at the different quarters. Quarter four, as compared to what we did in quarter four of 2021 when we did zero contact hours. And that, again, was big impact as far as our funding for the prison part of our operation. quarter one, again, you see some improvement, but again, we're still having that impact. Quarter two, those numbers reflect the numbers, previous numbers, because we don't have those numbers yet. And so this will continue to be something that we'll pay a lot of attention to, because it matters as far as our contact hour generation and funding as well. I would also point out that the Big Spring campus is being impacted also by what is happening with the GO closure, because although we did not submit contact hour generation for prison instruction at the private prison, for the employees that we trained through professional development, we are seeing impact. And so those numbers in quarter four and quarter one, those are reflecting what is happening with the closure of GO. You're seeing a drop in what is happening in the way of what is being generated in workforce training, because we don't have those individuals that we will be training. So that reflects workforce training. Student success, we see some of this in the summertime, but I want to point out the fact that we were able to do, I think, some amazing things during the 2021 year, and that is you see an increase in what was happening in the way of degrees and certificates. You see that those degrees and certificates across the district, people were still working hard to get students graduated, and that's the focus that we have on student success. And you're going to continue to see that focus, but I will make the point that was without a doubt a true challenge during a very challenging time with the pandemic. When you look at the bottom, you see our unofficial licensure pass rates. You can see a lot of 100%, a lot of programs that are doing very well. We've had some reports on that already this year, on how some of our programs have been pointed out and basically spotlighted at the state level because of their long history and doing well as far as producing 100% pass rates. And so that is reflective of what is happening across the district with those programs that have those kinds of requirements. Not all of our programs have those kind of requirements where students have to pass some kind of a licensure exam. But those that do are reflected there, and you can tell that the majority of those are the allied health programs. When you move to the next page, the success point in the three-year comparison, you're going to know that, again, this is a three-year average, and you're going to note that our numbers went down in 2020. Well, again, that's going to be reflective of student enrollment, because that's based on the metrics of your success points, and you can see them all up there. Students who are completing 15 semester credit hours, 30, and I won't read them all out, but all the different metric points are going to be impacted by your student numbers. And so we had a decrease in student enrollment, and so we saw some increase or decrease in that. Your next page is on tuition and fees, and that's pretty in not much change there. You know how that, as far as what we've done in the way of tuition. And then finally, on your last page is the financial snapshot, and that relates to what has happened with the tax rate. Is reflective of what happened as far as we did not have, we didn't increase our tax revenue at all for this year, 0% as far as the money we brought in, but the pockets changed around a little bit, and the rate is reflective of what happened with the tax base, because we did have a tax base that declined. And so you all, we spent a lot of time talking about all that back in August. And so that reflects all. At the bottom, you see how our appropriation is split up. Again, you saw a lot of this information during the budget time, as well as the current and unrestricted budget and how it looks. And then our rating as far as AA minus, so with a stable outlook after our refunding. So this will be something that is available to anyone. It's on our website. It is, again, a quick snapshot of who we are. We can share this with all that we work with, be it student groups, community people, industry, anyone that's interested. In fact, in a minute I'll talk about, I shared it this morning. And so this, again, is a quick overview of the facts of Howard College. Does anybody have any specific questions? Okay.
Very good.
Thank you. I'll move on then. Performance excellence as far as our students. As you all know, and again, if you'll remember, last month we gave you a chart of what we would be bringing on a monthly basis to supporting the area of focus. It's our student council for the fall. We've completed them, and you see the different campuses and what the students were telling us, and these are very useful. We have students that we have a round table for each one of our campuses, and then this time we did something a little different. We had a virtual round table. Last year, actually several years ago, it came out of one of the round tables that we needed to try to get feedback from those students who are virtual, are on mainly online, and see what they think. And so during the pandemic, it was kind of forced because we were doing everything online, and so we got good at Zooming, and so we decided this year we were going to incorporate what had been recommended in those student roundtables a few years back and have the opportunity for those students, anybody, if they were a student that could attend a face-to-face meeting on a campus but they just didn't get to and they wanted to still be able to participate, or a student that was truly online and didn't have an opportunity. So we went through and we had the different ones. In some instances, they were face-to-face, and some we ended up having to do a Zoom for weather or schedule or whatever. And then we will, next spring, we will do the same thing. As you know, what we do with these, we go in, the students, we do a quick overview of what they told us at the meeting prior, and we share after every meeting. As we begin to respond to what the students have requested of us as far as their concerns, we start posting what we're working on so they can see it. And then when we get to the next meeting, we have kind of that final summary for them of what we've worked on since the last time we had an opportunity to meet. And so the students then, what you have in your report, you have the new concerns they brought up, and then you see how we have assigned responses. Because what happens after the roundtables, the particular campus leader will then assign those to individuals that have responsibility for whatever that the student or students might have brought up. And so then we go to work on it, and we start giving answers. And so you'll see that in some instances when you look at this, we are not finished. We're still working on some things, and we will continue doing that until we get to the next roundtables, which will be in the spring. And so you will see those again. So, again, that represents all the different campuses. And do you have any questions about that?
We went down with the round tables.
Yes, sir. You can move to monitoring.
All right. Purchasing. Nope. Handbook.
Okay. Nothing. Yes, we had nothing for purchasing handbook and catalog changes, we do have, and you have those in your board book, and you can see some program changes that we have in the industrial trades area, as well as the farm and ranch management. And we list all those changes out for you. Amy, do you want to kind of give an overview of what we tried to do in industrial trades?
Certainly. We took this. There are not very many students that complete AAS in construction trades, and we think that one reason is because we have numerous. We have a welding certificate, an HVAC certificate, HVAC, there's several. A construction certificate, there's like five.
Electrical,
and then a wind energy.
Right.
And we revised this, so any one of those certificates now will feed into this. So we're hoping we'll encourage them to complete the associate applied science if that's what their goal is to do. So that is the, and they wanted to change the name to industrial trade.
And Amy, can I add into that? We also, like when a student, this will be in the catalog or online catalog. It is online. Anyway, it's in the catalog, and the students can see that they have the opportunity to take a lot of electives. And so we detailed down at the bottom the different electives that they could take, because a student might be interested in, okay, they might see industrial trades. Okay, well, what does that mean to me? You know, and so when you can see that there is a lot of elective opportunity, then that gives the student to get a broad range of opportunity in course down in those areas below. And so Amy detailed that out so that the students, they will be guided by their advisors to make sure they're making good progress. But that gives the student a cluster effect as far as what they can approach in industrial trade.
Yeah, they'll either specialize or get broad, depending on if they start at the certificate level or not.
Yeah.
And then in the farm and ranch management, we basically added the learning framework course, it should say learning framework, and revised some of the courses that actually reflect what we're teaching that are successfully make every semester. And then this, should someone wish to do so, this certificate then will feed into the Associate of Science in Agriculture, if that's their goal to go on to get the transfer degree. And then on the additional fees, it's actually costing that much now for that CNA test. That's to reflect that. Any questions?
All right.
Mr. Chairman, we will need motion for that to be approved.
I'll entertain a motion for the approval of the handbook changes.
I'll make a motion.
Motion, second?
Second.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries. Motion carries. So.
Adrian, have you called in now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so Adrian and Ben are now.
Okay.
Adrian was, for those who are listening from afar, Adrian was here, but now is able to be participating virtually. So, okay, thank you.
Faculty retirement resolution.
All right. We have a faculty retirement resolution for you to consider. Carla Harold, she has served at the college district since 2006, and I'm assuming you would prefer that I not read it, but she has been with the college for 16 years and has done a fantastic job in the different areas of responsibility she's had as the associate professor of economics. She served as a LEADS instructor, worked in the workforce education area, and has also participated in student groups. And so she's had a big impact.
Entertain a motion for that.
Motion.
Second?
Okay.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. All right. The memorial lease renewal.
Actually, before that, do you have something for new realigned positions? So I would go ahead and just real quick. I've already kind of touched on this, what is happening with the FCI. As you know, we have been working with the FCI as far as new programs they might have interest in, and they're still, again, they're going through change, and so we're working with them as they go through their changes and their challenges with the pandemic. With the closing of GEO, you know that we had several individuals that were displaced, and some of those chose to retire, but then some of the others, I've been reporting on them monthly for several months. We've had several of our individuals who have taken other teaching positions or other kinds of positions within the college district. Some of that has been, again, discussed in previous meetings. And so we are getting very close to having addressed our challenge. Let me just say it that way.
Okay.
All right.
You have any more?
All right. The Vietnam Memorial Lease Agreement, this is something that was started years ago. And we work with this group. They renew it every 3 years for $1. This is, again, an agreement that has been in place for many years, and we need to have it renewed.
I entertain a motion to renew the...
I move.
We have a second.
Second.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
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 And motion passed. So we'll go to construction and renovation.
Okay. I'll just kind of go quickly here, and Terry obviously can jump in and say whatever. Terry does a super job for us on a weekly basis, gives us an update on, and we have this for you, give it to you on a monthly basis as far as the progress that's being made on the roof project. As you know, we finished at SWID. We're on the Big Spring campus. Progress is being made. There have been some things that we've had some challenges about with some product delivery, that kind of thing, but we are making progress. Weather has already impacted a little bit. We anticipate that the Big Spring project is going to have more winter impact because of the time frame that we're going into. Terry, you want to give any other highlights?
I think you covered it. You mentioned the material delay, the highlights were originally already being here, but now they're saying they're January. Things like that, you know, beyond our control. Weather, you know, it's obviously beyond our control. I asked WCR, weather probably, what their best guess is for a finish day, and for the work that's already scheduled, possibly April.
Yeah.
That's what that could change.
With weather.
Factors.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, we're still waiting on the report on the hail. I think hail is just unbelievable.
Yeah. And so on that, Hailstorm 3, we continue to work with our insurance company, and we actually thought we were going to have some information by the end of, many weeks ago, but last week, we also thought we were going to, once again, we think we may have some information this week. And so we will hopefully at the January board meeting have some update for you. But without a doubt, this is challenging in that some of the roofs that we're working on in the already existing project were also impacted by Hailstorm 3. And so it's very difficult. We need answers so we know how to go forward. And we're WCR, they're doing a great job. Vernon Dunnigan and Phil Firkland are definitely helping guide. And, of course, Terry's right there in the middle of it with them, making decisions on how to go forward to use the time effectively and at the same time as we're trying to work through this next part of the roof project. Thanks. Terry, anything else you'd say?
I guess in summary, roofs that were scheduled for repairs now could be considered replacements. You know, it just makes it more complicated. You're obviously not going to repair the roof. So the repair money would go toward the replacement. Obviously,
replacing
costs. That's what we're
waiting for. Okie doke. Want to
take us? I can. I can move into the report and Board of Education and Development. Let's start with we need to give kudos to Marisha Beck for completing her trustee training, and it needs to go in the record that she completed everything.
Just like
that is a big deal.
We got a winner.
That's right. Congratulations on that. And she actually
survived it. That's the main thing.
Yeah, she went to Austin for the CB Leadership Conference. Marisha, is there anything you'd want to say about any of that?
It was really good for me, like, not having a background, and so I got to meet a lot of people in both community college and university settings, and just getting familiar, it was really beneficial as a trustee for sure.
Well, we appreciate you doing that. Okay, so activities, your calendar, you have that in front of you, and as I do every year, I would like to ask y'all to be gracious to let employees go at noon on the 17th as they begin the spring break. And so I'm going to ask you. Yeah. Excuse me.
We're going to start spring break now.
Yeah, we'll be gone for a long
one. Too long one.
Yeah.
All right, you're getting too close to the edge.
Yeah, I know it. Hey.
Like that, I'll be getting questions.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway. So the holiday break, winter break, whatever we want to call it, to have that at noon on Friday, and then you see what happens as far as the rest of the winter break. We do have some games going on, women's basketball, and then we open back up on the 3rd. Again, you can see from your calendar there's all kinds of activity going on with basketball season. The spring semester begins on the 18th of January, and so we will be getting ready for that and already are getting ready for the spring semester. So that's the calendar. Are y'all agreeing with me on Friday?
Yeah,
I agree. Do you want a motion?
Need a motion on that? Or?
Yeah, go for it.
I'll move that we dismiss on the Friday the
spring semester.
Thank you very much.
Spring break.
Yeah, spring break.
For our winter break.
Winter break.
We have a second.
Thank you.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so.
I'll call that a win.
Yeah. Okay, so recognitions, I would just like to, again, we've got several activities that have been happening over the last few weeks as far as our students. I mentioned some of them at the November board meeting, what happened with some of our fine arts and our play. We have this Thursday in San Angelo, we're going to have our RMA program. They're going to be having their pinning and their graduation, and so that's a big deal for those students. So again, it never stops. We never continue to be amazed at the strength of our students and what they're doing. We had the opportunity to visit with some of our nursing students last week. And again, it was about a donor who had given a scholarship, a smaller scholarship for the nursing program. And those students, again, the allied health students, they don't really ever get much of a break, but they do have a winter break. But our students are doing a great job, and so wanted to recognize them. Finally, legislative and general updates. So my missing in action a while ago, so I can let you know more about what's going on. I've been talking about the Texas Commission on Community College Finance. And you know, in the last legislative session, that the legislature determined that it wanted to do a review, a deep review of community college finance. And so they wanted to create a commission that would do a deep year-long study of the funding and then make recommendations that could go into the legislative session. This was the approach that they had with the public school finance. And I will remind you, there is a difference between public school funding and community college or higher ed funding in that it is a right as far as your public school students. They are going to, the legislative body is going to ensure that funding for the public school level is going to be there. When you get to higher ed, it's not a right anymore, it's more of a benefit, so to speak. And so the way that the funding has worked, it's basically, I think the language is, in an amount sufficient to assist with funding for higher ed. So that is why you see those differences in approach. But the community college funding, we have been concerned, you know, as a board, you've been concerned because of the shift that we have seen in the students, their tuition increases, as well as for taxpayers. And then you see across the state of Texas, the 50 community colleges, the diversity that we have. And so they have started the hearings. They had in November, they had kind of an introductory meeting. You can go online. You can go to the Texas Association of Community College website. You can look at commission. You can go back, and all of these meetings are going to be, they will be reserved, or not reserved, captured for viewing at a later time. But you can, in the first one, they spent some time on how, kind of the history of community college funding. And we know the formula that we're on right now basically came into being in the 70s. And we've changed a whole lot. That's 50 years. We've changed a whole lot in 50 years. And when it started, there was more support at the state level than what we find today. And again, you go back and look at the statute, an amount sufficient. You know, there's been a lot of debate about that through the years and who's the responsibility, who has responsibility for the funding. And so then what ends up happening is we see this great diversity of how people are determining what business models they use. Today, they had their second one, and then they'll have their third one in January. Then they will break up into three subgroups and do some further study. Then they'll come back together again. They'll start making their recommendations that will go to the legislative body by next fall. So today, they wanted to focus on the areas of the disconnect between taxing districts and enrollments, declining enrollments and population, and changing demographics. What happened back in November is that the state demographer gave a review as well. As I mentioned, they talked about the funding, but they also did some review of what was happening across the state. So they started with today. They gave a little more background on our funding. Dr. May, who's the chancellor at Dallas, he took on the responsibility, working with the Texas Association of Community Colleges, he took on the responsibility of trying to share what is happening for the community colleges. And his approach was interesting in that he is saying that, and I'm looking forward to being able to get the PowerPoint, he mentioned or proposes that what's happening is that all the colleges, there are different business models. And it depends on if you are an area that you are being, or a college that is being driven by tuition and revenue dollars, or you are a college that is driven by tax revenue, or you are a college that essentially is driven by your state funding. And he outlined that and has some information or showed some information that reflected what was happening across the state. We then moved into the disconnect between taxing districts and enrollments, and Blinn was represented by Mary Hensley, and then North Central Texas, represented by Brent Wallace, and they talked specifically about their campuses, but then they also talked about, tried to make it general as well so that we could look at what was happening between taxing districts and enrollments. The next panel was declining enrollments and population, and that panel consisted of Paris Junior College, Pam Anglin presented for them, South Plains, Robin Satterwhite, and then Howard College, and I represented us. And so we all tried to share what was happening, and the message that I tried to take was the fact that the three of us had talked the other day about the fact that we were really kind of a panel that was put almost on a defense because we were having to talk about declining enrollments and population, which is a little different than some of the others, because we represent areas that have declining enrollments and population. So the way that I tried to approach it for Howard College, and I thought it was representative for the other community colleges in the state that have this challenge, is that we've been watching this, we've known this. State demographer Murdoch started putting that out, and we knew that if you look at the state of Texas, that we were going to see declining population in the rural areas, that the Golden Triangle, which was really a term that was coined back in the 90s by Comptroller John Sharp at that point in time, as far as the activity in the state of Texas was centering around the Golden Triangle. But yet, when you looked at the rest of the state of Texas, you were seeing a lot of out-migration from communities, people moving to the Golden Triangle, then what was happening, the changing demographics. And so the point that I tried to make for the kinds of colleges that fit into this, which is mainly the rurals, is the fact that we've been trying to plan for this. Because we've been watching, in fact, we shared an article from the comptroller, well, it was from the Texas Observer. He gave that speech when he was the comptroller or the demographer. He gave that speech multiple times to the legislature, to anyone who would listen to him in the state of Texas. And basically, the question the reporter asked was, is anybody listening? And I made the point that we've been listening. And we've been trying to adjust to that, and we have been trying to strategically plan accordingly. I also made the point, after hearing what the others had said in the panel before, is in that, or actually Dr. May, that internally at Howard College and for a lot of the others that are like us, we don't have just one business model. We may have multiple business models as we're doing our budgeting because we have campuses that are driven by tuition, campuses that are driven by state funding, campuses that have the opportunity to have the taxing, and so it creates a real challenge. So, again, I would say we were the rural panel, and we were trying to make the point that we have been trying to plan. Yes, we've had declining enrollments. I made the point, we looked at our, you know, in our service area, 10 of our 13 counties have seen a decline in based on census data, but overall we have a 3% increase. But what we're also seeing is what the demographer projected, and that is that the population centers are going to see the increases in population, and you're going to see declines in the rural areas. And so we addressed that. So they continued on. I was able to participate because of the time frame that we had, and it continues on, and there's going to be another panel this afternoon that will be focusing on changing demographics. We're looking at poverty, how it's affecting the community colleges, and things that we're doing to try to address several of these factors across the state. In the meeting in January, they're going to focus on, they're going to start looking at some of the models that exist outside of the state of Texas, see if there's anything we can glean from other states that we may want to incorporate. I will tell you this morning, based on what I was picking up on, I don't know that this is where it'll go, but I think there is a real interest in funding that is driven more by success. Right now, the way our formula works, the core contact hours and the student success, really what it ends up being, contact hours and student success really all reflect how many students you have. And so for those of us who are rural, your points, depending on the amount of money that they give you in the pie for contact hours as a community college sector, for contact hours and for success points, are all going to be driven by how that pie is redistributed based on numbers. And so your larger institutions are always going to do better in that kind of a format. The core is the only thing that really kind of provides the community colleges that are smaller any kind of stability. And so that was talked about this morning. So we will see how that begins to move forward. But this is a very important commission to community college funding. We're hopeful that maybe we'll see some results. Of course, the legislative session is going to drive a lot of that. One of the things that the commissioner touched on, actually not the commissioner, but the Andrew Ovenheimer, can't ever say his last name, the LBB consultant that works with community colleges, he talked about what we were looking like as far as the state, what was projected as far as monies available, because obviously the amount of money that we have available going into the next legislative session will also drive some of the decisions that would ultimately be possibly picked up by the legislature as far as what they have in the way of funding. We, as a state, we're doing better, and some of the projections were not as dire as they initially projected, so that's been very positive for us. And so going into the legislative session, if there can be some money available and we can at the same time come up with some new ways of funding, and particularly I do think that people are understanding more and more of the small colleges and the rurals, how we're affected. And so that's one of the reasons that when I was asked if I could participate, telling them we had a board meeting and the only way I could do it was to Zoom, I was glad to have the opportunity, because very important for those of us in the rural areas to keep raising our hands and explaining what is happening, the challenges we're having, and that it makes it very difficult as far as what we're trying to do. And so that's it.
Oh, no. We done?
We're done.
Well, I guess we're adjourned if we're done.
Yeah, you just have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Benchmark for a 12-hour student that fund two?
No, we're not. The way the community colleges are funded, it's a cost study, and we do this big statewide. Every community college participates in it. We try to figure out how much it costs to deliver certain courses, programs, and then you get a dollar amount then that's basically assigned, and then the way you generate your contact hours is what you end up getting. But it's not on a per-student basis. But that was talked about in the first meeting a little bit today, and the fact that it's going to differ from across the state. One of the points that I was trying to make was that as far as the rural areas, when the author of the article made a comment about that demographics doesn't necessarily have to be destiny. I mean, decision making has something to do with this. And I would say that the community colleges that are in the position that we're in, we made decisions to try to do some things to serve the area that we serve. Joe May, the chancellor at Dallas, was making the point that he wasn't sure that we as a state are necessarily ensuring that every student that is outside of a taxing district is getting the same kind of opportunity. I tried to gently try to say that I feel like that we've tried to make an effort to do that, but it's very difficult. It's very challenging to be able to make sure that you're getting the same opportunity to your students, because when we look at our students, we know, and y'all know when we go through the budgeting in the summer, when we talk to you about tuition and fees, and we're looking at our budgets and we're pulling them together, it's very challenging because the only way that we can increase revenue for one campus, our San Angelo and La Mesa campuses, we've got to raise tuition. That's really the only way we can do anything to really increase revenue for that campus. And then who does that hurt? That hurts your students. And then for our SWID campus, we're so driven by our state funding. We don't have, as far as state tuition for our deaf and hard of hearing students, there is no tuition because that is waived. Then our out-of-state students, they have to pay the deaf and hard of hearing students outside of the state of Texas. They have to pay what a university student is paying in the state of Texas because of the way we're funded. And so their increase for a community college opportunity is much greater than what it would be if they were being able to take it a community college funding amount. Then you get to the Vicksburg campus and you see, the challenges we've had for our community and how we've increased taxes to try to offset what was happening at the state level. We've also increased tuition, and so you just have all these differing factors that make it a real challenge. But we're trying. At the end of the day, as I was talking about quick facts, we are trying to take care of the 13 counties we have responsibility for, the 26 school districts that we have responsibility for. The way we do it is unique and different. I can tell you, as a cabinet, as a group of people that get together, all of our different groups that get together and they talk about how do we do this, it's a challenge for us. But we're always trying to do the very best we can for making dreams real for our students. So we're hopeful that maybe there will be some positive that will come out of this. And will it change to some kind of a basically so much per head? You know, I don't know. I don't know where it will change or how it will proceed. But hopefully we will see some changes in our funding. I could talk so long. I know that. I need to be quiet.
Adjourned about 20 minutes.
I know. Don't ask a question.
Started to ask a question, but I guess.
No.
Yeah.
On your own time. Yeah.
It's all right. It's all right. Y'all would be real proud of me. I was very short.
Yeah, that's good.
No, I'm talking about the summit. I was under my amount of minutes. And today on the Zoom.
You're not over your...
Well, but Sherry, I mean, I agree. I mean, that's a very, very important thing, and it's very good that you're so highly involved in it.
Okay.
And so, and if we should have changed our meeting so you could have been there, we would, I mean...
Well, it was...
Speak for myself, but I mean...
Well, we had some other things that were happening, you know, that were challenging, and so, and we thought about that. But you know, I was working with a consultant, and he said it worked really well, and they liked it. And the fact of the matter is, the way that they're having these, you can't always make it.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's one of the things we learned during the pandemic. You can Zoom. You know, you can effectively participate. And so I've had, you know, some people texting me saying that, you know, that it went great, so I guess we did okay. You know, I was concerned how it would be Zooming, but I think we did okay.
Good.
Okay.
If you're good, I'm good.
I'm good.
I'm good.
All right. You're adjourning the meeting?
Yeah, it was about, yeah, okay. You missed that.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
You were talking and you missed that very loud.
No, I heard it. I just want to make sure. Okay. Thank you.
Making sure everybody was listening.
Yes, that's right. Thank you. Thank you, Ben and Adrian.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah. Or something. So
we're hanging up.
It's about a month.
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.